this episode of The Commercial Break.
It wasn't totally clear, I don't think, how Murray would exist past season two. Basically because they were focused on season two, but also, it was a different kind of character that was joining the cast, which is part of my immense gratitude that I not only got to be on the show, but got to play this very singular character on it that the Duffers brilliantly created for me. And they liked what I did, thankfully, and and made Murray grow, from third to fourth to the upcoming season. So made me a major part of the fan.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
And kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green. This is my dear friend and the co-host of this show, Chris and Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Chris.
Best to you, Brian.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. Aliens is the absolute correct noise for today because it's a TCB Infomercial Tuesday. And we have a superstar of a human being on our show today, Chrissy, from Stranger Things, the little-known show on Netflix that we're hoping gains some steam here in its fifth and final season. Murray from Stranger Things, also known as Brett Gelman in his real life, is here to talk to us today. We could not be more excited.
I am so happy to talk to him.
Fleabag, his own podcast, Neurotica. He's got a book out we'll talk to him about, and he has done many, many, many things in his career. Adult Swim. I mean, on and on and on. I can't name
it. Yeah, just looking at all of the things that he's done, I was like, my God.
Yes. If you look at the cover of this podcast and don't immediately recognize Brett Gelman as a guy who's been in a million things, then you're just not paying attention to pop culture, because he's been in a million things. He really has. And I think now he's hit his stride, Chrissy, I would say. He's got a brand new Netflix show out that we'll talk, Netflix show coming out. It's actually out right now as you're listening to this, called Entitled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on Netflix. And I'm interested to hear the story behind that. But he is the lead in this television
show. He's the
lead
and executive producer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So Brett is... When did he join Stranger Things? One or two?
Second.
Okay. He's the conspiracy theorist known as Murray. And then his role in the show grows as 3, 4, and now 5 come out. Is this, am I right about this is the last season?
It is.
Of Stranger Things? So, but I could easily see spinoff happening with Murray, just a show about Murray.
He's so unique.
That's what I like about Brett, and I look forward to telling him this, is that any role that he is in, he brings a very unique quality to it, where it's hard to imagine somebody else being placed inside of that role, because it's uniquely Brett Gelman. I don't know. He's one of those guys. He's got a face. He's got those mannerisms, that attitude, that voice that is undeniably Brett. So we are... so happy to have him. Listen, anybody from Stranger Things.
We're extremely thrilled.
We're extremely thrilled to have he does such an extremely fantastic job on Stranger Things and Fleabag, which I haven't watched a lot of.
Oh, I loved Fleabag. It's been out a few years now, but I mean, it's a fantastic show. Only two seasons. I wanted more, but Jeff and I kind of stumbled into it on Amazon. I loved it.
Every time I say that I'm a huge fan of British television shows and British comedy, everybody asks me, have you seen Fleabag?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been on my list for years to watch, but I've only caught a couple of episodes.
Bring it up to the top of the list.
I know. I must do. It's a do for Brian Green. Brian must do that very soon. If immediately, if not sooner, as one of my friends used to say. It's a funny
immediately,
thing.
If not sooner. Yes,
you would
that's
say,
a saying.
Oh, actually, I think that might be from Caddyshack, but my friend used to repeat it. He said, bring my car around immediately, if not sooner. That's the judge.
Yeah.
Caddyshack, bring my car around immediately, if not sooner. So let's do this. Why delay talking to Brett Gelman? Let's get as much Brett Gelman as we possibly can. I want to talk to him about his early days in acting, his time with UCB, his long run with Adult Swim, which is just, I mean, Adult Swim is brilliant. Anybody
really
doesn't
is.
Think of Adult Swim as brilliant, you don't need to be a friend of mine. And if you haven't heard of Adult Swim or you haven't gotten on board yet, it might be too late, but who knows? Didn't they take Adult Swim down or something?
Yeah, they've really downsized Adult Swim, unfortunately.
Fuck that.
I know.
Fuck that, Turner Broadcasting, HBO Max Plus minus double Cinemax, yeah, whatever you're calling yourself these days. Fuck that. If there's one golden nugget out of all of the content that you have, it should be Adult Swim. That should get treatment as if it was the Dead Sea Scrolls itself. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was so it's so unique,
weird and funny.
And I mean, there's so many shows on there that are just incredible.
I mean, when aliens come down,
you can't believe it's on TV.
Yeah. 50 billion years from now, when we're dead and then life repopulates the planet, you know, it shakes off the shitty human beings that are living here now and it reforms and some other life form is here, intelligent life form, and they're digging in the dirt one day and they find something related to Adult
Swim.
Treasure. It's a treasure that they can mine and they're going to go, whoa, it was a lot weirder than we ever thought it was. But they'll be laughing at least. They'll be laughing. And that's what matters. Adult Swim. Why? Why, Adult Swim? Why? Shame. Shame. All right, let's do this. Let's take a short break. And when we get back, through the magic of telepodcasting, Brett Gelman from Stranger Things, Fleabag, Adult Swim, and UCB will be right here in the studio on our TV, and we can talk to him about all these things. Poof. It's magic. It's magic. You can be anyone that you desire. Magic. I got a lovely text message from a listener of ours, Elizabeth, who shared with me that she had pre-ordered some of our merch at shoptcbpodcast.com. She then went on to explain that she got the university sweater and the TCB logo t-shirt, but as she was checking out, she wanted to put a bit of spice in her life, so she ordered the piggy fronting t-shirt. But Elizabeth is no regular listener. Just like everybody, she's got a story. Elizabeth is involved in event production and often deals with the Teresa Caputo tour itself. Not all heroes wear capes. Some wear piggy-fronting t-shirts. And in case anybody at the Caputo offices are listening, Elizabeth is not her real name. Enjoy the piggy-fronting t-shirt. ShopTCBPodcast.com. Available until the 22nd of August. Pre-order now and get a free TCB sticker with every order. Also, when you get that merch, tag us on Instagram. We may send you free additional merch. Now let's hear from some sponsors and we'll get back to this episode of The Commercial Break. Brett, thank you very much for joining us.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. We are big fans of your now seemingly large body of work.
Seriously.
And so many things that everyone will know, of course. Is Stranger Things the thing that makes you like not be able to get through an airport because people like fawn over you? Is that the one thing that everybody goes, oh my gosh, you're the guy from Stranger or Fleabag? Or which one do you get noticed more for?
I would say Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say Stranger Things is the most. Yeah, that's like, I have the same level of fame no matter where I go in the world. It's wild.
Yeah. It's got to be spend a few minutes on it and then we'll move on because I imagine this has got to be like life-changing because very few television series have captured the collective imagination like Stranger Things. It really was a global phenomenon and it's unbelievable. Did you know when you jumped on board, did you understand the juggernaut that this thing was going to become? Well,
I jumped on in season two, so I already knew.
But
you know, and so
yeah, that's true.
And,
season one,
but I didn't know what my involvement would be necessarily. You know, I came to play this character. I don't have like a ton in season two, and it wasn't totally clear. I don't think how Murray would exist past season two. Basically because they were focused on season two, but also, yeah, it was a different kind of character that was joining the cast, which is part of my immense gratitude that I not only got to be on the show, but got to play this very singular character on it that
yes.
the Duffers brilliantly created for me. And yeah, and then, you know, they liked what I did, thankfully, and and made Murray grow, you know, from you know, third to fourth to the upcoming season. So made me a major part of the fan. And
when does that come out? I'm so excited about it coming out. I've watched them every year. So it's coming out
this
summer, right?
You gotta look up the trailer.
Okay.
The teaser for the upcoming thing. It's the ultimate flex. There's three installments. Nice. There's three installments. It's the day before. It's the day before Thanksgiving. The first installment.
Okay, so this fall.
Second is Christmas.
Oh my God. Okay.
Third is New Year. and they're saying you love this show so much, you're going to spend your holiday this
way. Your whole holiday.
But the thing is, though, is most people, a lot of people spend their holiday at home anyway.
Of course.
So it is like a brilliant marketing thing. But even people I know who probably have plans to go out, you know, that's what the fandom of the show is. They will sit, they will choose to stay home instead now that they know that it's coming out.
Yeah,
and you are going to have just raucous fucking numbers. That's going to be raucous fucking numbers because I imagine a lot of people do go out Thanksgiving, Christmas, they're traveling, but no one in their right minds does not have their device in their hand at night and go, I've got to do this. I got to check this out.
No, I mean, like, you know, if they're like on a road trip or something, they're going to pull over and they're going to watch it on their phone in a gas station bathroom. I mean, like, it's just that type of thing. It's going it's amazing to be a part of something that is so gargantuan in such like a way that has not, you know, happened that much in this business and in this art form. You know, the original Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, and then this show. And but the best thing about it is that it very much deserves to be that big.
Yeah.
And then I'm artistically very proud of it. I'm very proud of being a part of it. I mean, I've said this a lot. I watched the first season in like 2 days.
Oh,
I binged it in 2 days. I was
did.
A massive, I was like, somebody was like, you check out this show, Stranger Things on Netflix. Oh yeah. House of Cards, Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Those two shows.
It was.
I'm like, yeah, I'm that thing over there.
Yeah.
It's got this new great show. Okay, I'll check it out.
You mean the people who mail the DVDs to you? Yes, you can now see a thing on the thing, and you get the thing with your thing.
I think we were still getting DVDs mailed to us by the time this came out.
I think you're right.
And it was like, yeah, okay, cool. I was filming this film Lemon, you know, that I co-wrote.
Oh, yeah.
And I was co-producing it. It was like the week was like, had 1 day off a week or 2 days off. Anyway, no, it had to have been 2 days off, but like the week was so intense. And then I remember just being like, okay, gonna watch the show on the weekend. And I turned on, and after 10 minutes, I was like, this is what I'm spending my weekend doing, I guess, because this is one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And then I did call my agent and I was like, you got to get me on this show. And you do that a lot in your career.
Sure.
Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
And your agent goes, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll try. Like, right. I mean, that's
what happens. And, that's what you pay your agent to do, is give you the good news and never the bad, right? Yeah, we'll try.
Exactly.
They never
try.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't want to tell you bad news and bum you out. And, you know, I get it. And they can't force anybody to hire you.
Sure.
And they can't force anybody to get you in the room. You know, obviously there's cases where agents are not working for you, but I am lucky that I don't have that. You know, my reps work very hard for me, and I'm very grateful to them. But he called. He's like, I got you in there. And I went in. I had no idea. It was like a monologue. It's like, this guy's a conspiracy theorist. That's all you were given. He's like a strange conspiracy theorist. You don't totally know what he is. So the rest I just kind of did with my, you know, imagination in the room. And I remember seeing an actor who I very much admire. He was in the waiting room. And as I came out, and I just did a very, you know, to me, it was like a very simple thing with him in a way. You know, there was just, it wasn't, you didn't want to do too much with him.
Right.
Because what was swarming around him was so much. And then I remember doing a very like simple read and letting all of that conspiracy and paranoia come through. And then I walked out of the waiting room. This guy had a hoodie up and he was like, I was like, ah, oh, that guy's getting it. That guy's getting it. I'm not getting this. And that guy's like methoding out in the in the waiting room. He's dead. I should have put more in. I should have done more. And but no, I got it.
You did.
I got it.
Speaking of being out of town, real quick, while the seasons come out, I think it was season two. My husband and I had gone up for like a North Georgia mountain weekend, but season two had just come out, and we ended up watching it like the whole, like binged like the whole season.
Chrissy went to go get into nature, and she watched exactly. She watched Brent for the entire weekend.
Oh man,
it's one of those shows, though.
It really is. I binged every season, mm-hmm. and as I watch seasons that I'm in, I'm still watching it as a fan, and like even like feel. Like I'm not watching my like I'm watching my character. It's really
the
wild.
Mark of great art is that even when you're a part of it, it becomes something completely different that even you yourself don't recognize. It's like, and you're filming it probably in some ways. I don't know, but I imagine some parts are disconnected. You get little 3-minute chunks that you're filming. You're in certain parts. They're in certain parts. And then they piece it all together. When you go in for that original audition and they say conspiracy theorist and you're like, okay, when you do an audition like that and they don't give you a lot to work with, are those the hardest to do when they don't give you a lot of direction? They just say conspiracy theorist here, take it and run with it. Or in a way, is it liberating because mm-hmm. there's a piece of paper you can color with?
Oh, there is nothing for me that's liberating about an audition. I saw two actors talking, I won't say who, and I was so jealous of them because they were like, I love auditioning, I miss it. I miss it because it's my chance to perform. It's my chance to perform. And I have to, in an audition, constantly remind myself, this is a performance, this is a performance, this is a performance. Because rather than it's me trying to get the job, because that's where my brain is naturally going to. And I think it's like a reaction to all of the rejection, all of the years that you just, you know, they're a big part of your brain knows. And this is the reality. I think no matter how successful you get, that there's a great likelihood you're not going to get the role.
Yeah.
That this will be the only time you'll be saying these lines and at all playing this character. And so there's this thing, this like sort of like, I think for me, that starts to like just be like, don't, you know, just like, don't worry about it. And I have to fight that so hard, which now I'm the best I've ever been at fighting that sabotage, you know, inside of my head. But, you know,
fighting
I also
the urge to want it too much. And that starts to affect what's going on in the room instead of just being present in the moment and letting whatever happen as the performance unfolds. Yeah.
Fighting the urge to want it too much. And then that urge to compensate for that by not mentally and emotionally prepping in the right way to where you are like sort of throwing it away and not to, you know, treating it like it should be.
Yeah.
But I what helps me with that though is I mean, I work really hard on auditions. I do when I read, because I'm lucky that the things I read for, I really want and they're really good. most of the time. And even when they're not, it's, you know, it's a job I want. So, you know, sometimes, yeah. Hey, this isn't like the best thing, but I see that it'll be good for me and I'll be able to make this character. I'll be able to enjoy playing this character. Mm-hmm. And so then I just, you know, really focus on, I have, you know, I have my guru who helps me, my coach, Martha Gaiman, who is, you know, getting into it with her now, which I have been for the last few years, it helps that too, because it makes it more of a part of like you're engaging in the art, you know, and not the just trying to get the gig, you know?
Yeah. Not so much the hustle of it, but the moment of it. I think one of the things that is immediately identifiable about you in the things that I have seen you in is that there's an originality. You bring an originality to each of the roles that you play that's mm-hmm. unique and identifiable, where there are a lot of other actors and actresses that I don't identify. It
could be interchangeable.
It could be interchangeable. Mm-hmm. You could put anybody in there and it would be, and that's not to knock the actors and actresses. Everyone's working very hard at what they do, I'm sure. But you bring something, there's a little extra spice. There's some magic. There's some, you know, unique. Allspice in there. I don't know how to say it, but it's very unique. And you're immediately bringing something to that role where you can't imagine somebody else as Murray. Like, it's just not an easily, and in my opinion, I wouldn't imagine anybody else in that role now.
I agree.
Where there are other people, maybe not in Stranger Things, but in other roles I can think of where I would be like, that could be anybody that looks like that could play that same part. Mm-hmm. So I think that says something about your ability to channel a certain creative force.
Thank you. That means a lot, man. That means a lot. I strive for that. I strive for that. I think, you know, I'm lucky that I've got led into learning a lot of different schools of acting. A lot of different, you know, I'm classically trained, mm-hmm. Which, you know, is basically like conditioning your body to act everything.
Yeah.
Especially classical theater, which, you know, if you're not trained in that, it can be more difficult. You know, you have to learn. It's just such a beast like no other.
Did you learn some of that at North Carolina? Am I right?
Yeah.
You went to North Carolina Performing Arts.
Yes. It's a classical training program. Mm-hmm. It was a conservatory. So it was like you lived and breathed acting, voice, script analysis, all different.
Which quite a few people have that school, you know, have gone to that school. I know Danny McBride, it kind of perked my ears when I saw you had.
Well, Danny was in film. Danny wasn't in the acting program. But yeah, Danny, I was there when Danny and Joey Hill and David Gordon Green were in the film program. And they basically, I mean, were sort of the pioneers of that program and sort of brought it to be what it is now. And then, Craig Zobel and like, you know, these people. But, but getting that training. And then when I graduated, I couldn't, you know, get a job. I was like, I'm going to be on Broadway. People would be like, you know, you should do like sketch too. You'd be great on Saturday Night Live. And I was like, no, I'm going to Saturday Night Live. Pish posh, pish posh.
Shakespeare and then the we park. Have the,
exactly, you know, all the major playwrights of the day. One man angels in America.
Salesman for the queen. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And then and then it was like, no, who are you? Bye. Like, I think like we did this like it was performing for all the agents and casting directors of the day. And nobody wanted to sign me. And then I mean, I've said this so many times, but the only advice I got was from one like battle axe of a casting director who agreed to have a sympathy meeting with me. And she's like, you're a character actor, kid. You'll work when you're 50. But then I was lucky that the Upright Citizens Brigade was coming into fruition in New York. You know, it was in its early days. This was 1999. I was 10 years old. I was a prodigy and skipped through. I mean, I'm acting Stutie Hauser. No, but yeah, it's crazy to think that it was that long ago. And then it was really much in its infancy. Even though it was like the hot thing in town, though, it was like, I mean, they were the four of them, you know, Amy, Matt Besser, Ian Roberts, and Matt Walsh were, and then everybody like associated with that. They were like the coolest show in town. Then, you know, you have the student body, which was us, and we all built it to be, you know, under their guidance and, you know, we all, like, as a group, built it to be what it, you know, to make it equal the Groundlings and Second City as, like, a place to find comedic performers and writers. And, you know, and then, like, it reawakened in me, like, my love of sketch and everything, and, like, how much that was, like, my roots and that, you know, I really needed to be reminded of, like... Yeah, I did want to be on Saturday Night Live, and like the Saturday Night Live performers are still some of my favorite actors, and just, you know, sketch in general and comedy in general, everyone from Mel Brooks to Monty Python. So and because I knew how to be on a stage, unlike some of the weirdos that they were letting in there in the early days.
Right.
Because it was such a dope, which I'm very grateful for. It was like so in awe, because, like, you know, the UCB would be like, wow, this person is one of a kind strange. And they're not an actor, but people need to see them on stage. And we need to see, like, how somebody, like, vibes up against that person. And I don't know if that's, like, really what it is anymore. I haven't, I'm not sure.
Sure.
That was really great to see and to be in this, like, rough environment and be going from. So it was like putting yourself out there and, like, seriously sucking a lot of the nights was another great training, and just like, and being so heavily involved in long form improv and then, like, the alt comedy scene, which was like the stand up scene that was not the clubs where the weirdest you could be, the better. Even it was more important to be strange than funny at sometimes.
That seems more fun.
Listen, I've been doing a lot of homework on this kind of early 2000s alt comedy scene that was going. I mean, Zach Galifianakis might be one of the most famous examples of someone who was just weird as fuck, but he would keep the bit going long enough that it just. All of a sudden, it was Kaufman-esque. Yeah. Honestly, it was. And there were places they'd be in, like, the, I don't know, in the bathroom of a coffee shop doing, like, comedy. And people would show up to be there because it was just performance art that had this comedic twinge to it. And it sounds like the UCB early on wasn't that. But they were butting up against, like, they were welcoming that energy into the room at times. Like, hey, that's
absolutely
weird. Let's bring him in and see how it goes.
Yeah. Then the two scenes, like, started to merge in a more, like, concrete way. And you started to have, like, you know, a lot of the all comedians doing shows at UCB. And then, like, I mean, you were striving to be, I was striving to be like Zach or like John Glazer, you know? I mean, John Glazer. It is my Louis, you know. Well, Louis was a lot to a lot of people, or, like, you know, Chris is to a lot of people. It's like John Glazer would do these bits that I just, and this is when John was writing on, like, Late Night with Conan O'Brien and just, like, coming in and doing these bits. And you have people like him and Brian Stack and Andy Bliss and just doing these wild, bizarre bits that, was like what we were all striving for. And, like, you know, Mr. Show with Bob and Dave, you know, Odin Kirk and David Cross.
So,
and, like,
yeah.
So it was like that stuff was, like, what was fueling the alt scene. And then what that was also fueling UCB, but, you know, what was also fueling UCB, which was, you know, as much of a heavy influence on me, was, like, You know, that was when Will Ferrell was on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the height of Conan O'Brien. That was like, it was just a very, very exciting time in comedy.
It really
and,
was.
Yeah. And so, like, that was what we were all vying to get on Saturday Night Live. And they had lots, you know, that you'd see Tina Fey and Rachel Dratch come and do ASCAD every Sunday. And, you know, it was amazing. And so then there was that. And then I also started studying the method, you know, with certain teachers and getting into that teacher named Tony Greco. And then
who
was like Strasberg's.
About method acting, because I've read a fair amount about method acting, and we've all have examples of method actors who have put down performances on celluloid that were just remarkable. But it seems like a very hard,
seems intense
place to go sometimes. But I don't know. I've never method acted.
Yeah. No, it's very hard. It's very hard, but very fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, you know, and my former personal trainer asked me one day, he was like, it's like, hey, man, are you a method actor? And I was like, oh, wow, I don't know how to answer that question. And then I asked Martha, you know, and so after Tony, then I started, you know, working with Martha on all of my roles. And Martha's the head of the actor's studio, which basically... Lee Straw, you know,
yeah,
yes,
created, you know, created the American acting form in this country, which by way of Russia, obviously, by way of the Soviet Union. But so, and she's the daughter of Estelle Parsons, who is like, you know, at method act, you know, American acting royalty.
Legend. Yeah.
And yeah, and, you know, Roseanne's mother, if you wanna, which is an incredible performance. Yeah. And so I was like, hey, my personal trainer asked me if I'm a method actor. And I'm like, am I? She's like, just when people ask you that, tell them that you have a process.
It does seem like a process.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. Like, I don't think it's like one thing. Like, I think it depends on the thing you're doing. And I've said this a lot, that like you can over prepare. One thing that I remember Tony telling the class, he's like, you can over prepare for a role as much as you can under prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So not every role is going to be given the same things.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be. Otherwise you're not, it's just not doing the thing service, or your way, you know, if you put too much of like, what some may call, you know, refer to as like the methodology into a role, it's going to weigh it down potentially, you know,
it becomes a thing. So, it's not, you're, and now all of a sudden it's just another thing altogether. It's like you're just adding too much to it.
What it does do though, across the board, is it gets you thinking about the role and the thing in an immersive way that leads you to, you know, hopefully doing it in the way that it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear
and
about,
because it's not always like every and everybody thinks about method acting is that you're the character the whole time.
Yeah,
and that's not necessarily.
Yeah,
that's not technically what it is. It's more about like sensory and, you know, sense memory, emotional memory, and these things. Being the character the whole time is not like what's taught at the studio, you know. But that's something that a lot of actors choose to do, because they develop their own process to do that. And I'm not going to hate on that.
No,
a lot of great people do that, but, it's not necessarily the classic method acting.
Interesting.
I saw this really funny reel the other day. Dave Chappelle is on stage and he says, my dad died and I couldn't get over it. And I got a phone call. I forgot who it was from, Conan or somebody. And he said he knew that I was a fan of Jim Carrey. And he said, you want to go and meet Jim Carrey? And he said, Dave said, this is the first time I can remember being excited about anything since my dad died. I really wanted to meet Jim Carrey. He was kind of my hero. So I go to set and I didn't know he was filming Man on the Moon. the of course, when he's playing Kaufman. And he says, so I go into the trailer and I'm waiting, and all of a sudden Jim Carrey walks in the door, and I go, oh my God, Jim Carrey, I've been wanting to meet you. And the whole room goes dead silent. And they, and somebody leans over and goes, his name is Andy.
Yeah.
And he goes, who the fuck is Andy? Who the fuck is Andy?
Yeah.
And he wasn't responding when I was saying, hey, Jim. I reached my hand, and he goes, yeah. I came all this way to meet Jim Carrey. I met some asshole named Andy. And he said, but it was, he was telling the story about how amazing it was to be in that, years later, he recognizes how amazing it was to be in that trailer at that moment when someone is doing, you know, preparing for this performance or being in this moment that ended up being such a great movie, such a great performance by all accounts, right?
Amazing.
But I think that's, like you said, that's probably a very exaggerated version of what method acting is. But if maybe that's just where Jim Carrey needed to go in that moment to get that performance that he wanted.
Who knows? The method with all of your Adult Swim things that you did?
I did a bit because with that stuff, I mean,
we're huge fans.
Yeah, I mean, huge fans,
especially in Atlanta of, here.
Yeah.
Of this of Adult Swim or
in general, and especially Mr. Pickles.
Oh my God, Mr. Pickles!
I saw that was credited to you, and I was like, I've got to ask him about that. That show is so incredibly just bonkers, crazy. It's so amazing. My husband and I laugh so hard at that show.
I do owe Adult Swim a lot. I owe Adult Swim a lot. You know, we had a little bit of a tricky thing, you know, over, you know, a little bit of a falling out. But, and you can look it up in the news.
Yeah, we don't
I don't want to talk about it.
No,
but they, you know, really gave me a major platform to, and gave a lot of people a major platform to do things that you could never do anywhere else on television. I mean, like, and that was a major thing too. That was a major like force of my life for a while, was doing Eagle Heart and doing my dinner specials. Mm-hmm. That I remember watching my dinner specials and I'm like, I can't believe this is on television.
Right.
And I think like Entitled has like a you know, the show that's coming that I'm we only mentioned this in the pre-interview.
Yeah, talk about this.
That's tell us more.
Jump in. Let me tell the audience.
I fell into this.
We're going to talk about this, but he described this right before we came on air in our little intro chat here. He described this as a gothic horror comedy that even if you don't like it, you're going to ask yourself, why the fuck
so
is
weird.
This on television? So now tell us about Entitled.
Definitely.
What's the story there?
I made it with the Fleabag producers.
Great.
Myself and my wife are the only Americans in the show. Everybody else is British.
Okay.
And Ari Diane, who we'll talk about in a second. And then I play a disgraced plastic surgeon.
I already like it.
Yeah, it's already right up my alley. Yeah. It's British with a disgraced plastic
surgeon. I play a disgraced plastic surgeon, and my wife dies who's British, in a freak hot tub accident.
Oh.
She's electrocuted. And I've never met any of her family. She says she's estranged from her family. She told me she grew up poor. But in her will, it says, I want my body to be returned to my family in England. And I strap her coffin to the roof of a car. And once I land in the airport, because I'm broke, I have to transport it there myself. And I bring her body to an address that she's given me, and it's a gigantic mansion. And it turns out she lied to me. She was a part of the aristocracy. This family, and this family is very strange. and it's not clear. There's a lot of secrets. There's some supernatural elements. It gets very gothic horror.
Nice.
And it's a gothic horror comedy. I should have said that to begin with. And then the family maybe is trying to kill me, maybe drive me insane. And that's, you know, and from there, I don't want to reveal too much, but that's like a lot of the gist of the show.
You wrote this and did this 2 years ago?
I didn't write it. Matt Morgan, very talented writer named Matt Morgan. But
you guys produced this 2 years ago.
I was one of the executive producers on it. I was one of the producers on it with two brothers who made Fleabag and with Matt and with the, and it's directed by Tim Kirkby, who is a fantastic director who, you know, came up in the whole like alt, like when I was coming up in comedy too, like we were watching Look Around You, which Tim directed and things like The Mighty Boosh and of course The British Office. And,
so good.
You know, there was such a like vibrant alt British comedy scene that was making all of these amazing television shows that me and my friends were watching and that were heavily influencing on. So like this is like kind of like a culmination of that in this of like, you know, that influence on me.
This sounds like my kind of television show. Sure, yeah, because already what you're describing sounds wild, but then, you know, the kind of the organic roots are like Mighty Boosh, in my opinion, is a brilliant comic television show, but I just have a weird sense of humor that sounds like you share, you know. Adult
Absolutely.
Swim, Mighty Boosh, Peep Show, like all these weird British television comedies.
Merengue's Dark Place.
Yes.
You know, like, that Adult Swim showed a lot on the network because it was very much in line with, you know,
Adult
me
Swim.
And Tim and Eric and stuff like that.
Tim and Eric, awesome show, great job. Like these shows, and if you grew up in a certain time, Adult Swim was everywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it is so much anymore. Things have changed. I'm sure it's different now, new ownership and all that other stuff. And I know they've been downsized in some ways. That's what I've read. But it's a great American gift to comedy because it gave a home to comedic voices that were far from mainstream, but absolutely fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like people who should have been platformed when Reba was on or King of Queens. Not that, you know, listen, they have their place too, but, you know, I guess my comic sensibilities are just a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more spicy than those types of shows. But
yeah, like
you were
Xavier
all up in that. Yeah.
It had Xavier Renegade Angel, this amazing, brilliant piece of art, you know, and I mean, it just like had so much stuff that there's no way any other network would have greenlit it ever.
So Entitled is on Netflix. I just want to let the listeners know. Entitled is on Netflix. As you're listening to this, Entitled is on Netflix. It just came out July 15th. So go watch it. It's a series.
And my gratitude. Netflix saved it. It was floating around. It didn't really have a home for various reasons for a couple years. And we didn't know. And I'm very grateful to Netflix for saving it, to put it out there so the world can see it in the best way possible.
I have to say to Netflix, there's a lot that I don't like. There's some stuff that we can all argue about. And I think in some ways, streamers broke something that maybe didn't need to be broken. But anyway, I put that aside to say that Netflix in a lot of ways does support comedy
in a large
mm-hmm. way. They have bought in big, especially on stand-up comedy. And they do put, you know, they do tend to come in and take chances on television shows that otherwise are just not going to get made. They're not going to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, they're a business and they're not unlike, it's like the way in which this comes to us changes, but it's still the same thing. You're still going to be getting from every outlet, every studio, every network, most things are going to be shit. And then you're going to get your special things that you love.
Right.
And the fact that Netflix is, you know, and everywhere really is willing to support special things still. We're doing okay. You know, we're doing as good as we've ever been doing. This is not an easy business, you know,
and it never has been, by the way. You know, it never has been. And the listen, the big studios and all the drama, blah, 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 they will be around and they will just morph into, you know, things are just changing. That's it. It will shuffle itself out and it will figure out its way. And, you know, as long as there are companies like Netflix to support creators' visions, then things will come to light. Hopefully if they should. Stranger Things is a example of the one in a billion television or movie projects that is just defies gravity and pun intended, right? It just defied gravity. And that's, and you, I have to go back way back to the beginning of this conversation. The one question I didn't ask that I would love to hear, what happens when you get the phone call that you got it, you're it, here you go, you got the gig on Stranger Things?
Flipped out. I mean, so beyond happy, so ecstatic, and then immediately worried that something is going to make it fall through.
When is the other shoe going to drop?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Brett, we're exactly alike.
I'm so excited. I will be more excited when I am on set.
Uh-huh.
And when I've not been cut out and I'm kept in.
When I see the finals, when I see the finals and I'm there and my words are there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it was always this thing because, you know, the Duffers are really secretive. So you do have this thrill every season when you get to see it, you know, what you're going to do. And so they always surprise me with incredible things. You know, it's just fun to see it just be laid out in real time in front of your eyes. I mean, obviously they give you enough time to prep, but you know, it's understandably, you can't like tell actors too much.
Right. Yes. You can't tell anybody much.
No.
When you come here to Atlanta, do you live here in Atlanta for a period of time?
I mean, I've lived there a lot.
Yeah.
I never like moved there totally because the way in which I had a house there at some point. But you know, you come in and out because a lot of times they're shooting a lot of your stuff really condensed and then you have some time off. So, So I would be there for long stints, but not like crazy long stints, not like relocating there.
Yeah.
One day, I don't want to mention it because I don't want to give an indication of where I live. I love our fans. I love our listeners, but I don't want them at my front
keep
door.
It private. Don't do it. You know, all it takes is one lunatic.
Yeah, that's it.
Totally.
But
believe
we're here
me.
In Atlanta. And one day we're looking out the window to see a couple of police officers just sitting across the, outside the neighborhood across the street. And then all of a sudden, trucks are pulling up, trailers are pulling up, lighting rigs, gears. I mean, this is all happening like within 3 hours, right? All of a sudden, it's like a full-blown movie set out there. And we have to go somewhere. We go somewhere. We have dinner. It's like 2.5 hours later. We come back and they're shutting everything down and moving. You know, they're essentially gone. And we were like, wow, that was weird. And, you know, they have all these signs and people put online what the signs mean. You know, here, go there. This is this film. That's that film. And I thought to myself, what the hell did they just do? In 3 and 5 hours, they went up and they came down. That seems. And anyway, so we went to learn from the neighbors across the street that what were they were doing was pickups for Stranger Things, like some kind of, you know, second photography or whatever they call it. Like they were doing some extra shoots or, you know, scene shoots or whatever. But it's all over Atlanta. If you lived here long enough, you've seen a Stranger Things set or two somewhere around here.
Totally.
Yeah.
And no, it's as much of a part of Atlanta as Outcast or Future.
Yeah.
You know, it's but I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that it's like an Atlanta production.
We're
you know,
proud
and
of
that it,
we are.
It yeah. Because yeah. Atlanta's an incredible, you know, Atlanta has driven the culture, you know, pop culture in such a huge way, especially the last 30 years.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
In such an important, prevalent way, whether it's music or television or film. It's just, you know, and so it's cool to be there for that, you know, in so many different ways. And I mean, even when I wasn't filming there, you know, Adult Swim's in Atlanta, network and was very much like coming out of the spirit of Atlanta and was aligned with like the experimentation of Atlanta that people don't give it enough, still don't give it enough credit for. And so I think like that's like a very big thing about the regarding the creativity of the show.
Love him or hate him, Ted Turner gave a lot of people a lot of freedom to do a lot of stuff. We can thank him for 24-hour news. We can thank him for adults. We can thank him for TNT and Braves baseball being popular across the world. I mean, we can thank Ted for a lot of things, including owning a lot of land out.
There was a recent documentary that came out on HBO about him, and his life is incredible.
The things he's done with his life, it was incredible. Brett has a podcast also that I find very entertaining. Please tell us a little bit more about
it. Thank you.
You're welcome. I find it extremely entertaining.
Extremely.
Let me be clear about that. I find it extremely entertaining.
I do that to my rep, like, good, you know, my manager, good job on the, you know, on the show. What do you mean good? I have like a weird thing with good. I
adjective.
It's again insecurity. No, it's called Neurotica. It's hosted by myself and my wife, Ari Dayan, who's also an actress and a singer-songwriter. And we basically riff the whole time and talk about a lot of the aspects of our relationship. And you know, it's really is meant to make the listener or viewer feel like you're sitting down to dinner with us. It's the same case that and same experience if you were just like in a restaurant or a bar or at our house with us. And it's like no boundaries. The two of us are sensual beings and neurotic beings, hence Neurotica. So,
I was listening
to
an episode a couple of weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember. And Brett goes, "So tell me about your love life." His wife. This playful energy the two of you have that I really appreciate. I really do.
Thanks.
A lot of ways I there's some familiarity there to the relationship that I have with my own wife. Mm-hmm. It's really funny. So wherever you get podcasts, Enlightened is coming out. Let's make that something that gets a season two. Or does it conclude? Yeah. Is it a mini series or could it be
limited
a season
series,
two?
Yeah.
Is it limited?
There could be a season two. Absolutely.
Great.
There you go.
Well, I would be more than down for it to be a season two, but we got to see how it does.
Yeah.
You know, everyone must pray to the algorithm.
Yes.
Right.
And I'm hoping that the ST fans, you know, need a little appetizer before the season five premiere and need
before
me that
season.
Bad.
Yes.
No, but I'm very proud of it. It's one of the best things I've ever done. And, and you know, you get to see me in the lead for better or for worse. You're with me for most of the time. You're with me for the most of the time.
Well,
hanging out with me.
Do I sniff a Stranger Things spinoff coming in the works? I don't know.
Oh my God!
I read some internet fandom that says, you know, people say a lot of things. You know, who knows? Whatever.
That is, you know, there is nothing
in the works.
In the works, but I would be more than down for that. I would love Murray to have a spinoff.
Yeah.
I think that would be really, really, I see how that could work. And I think it could be really, really fun. And there'd be a lot of karate and a lot of language and a lot of foreign languages and foreign dialects. I think we'd start getting really a lot more into disguises. And so it'd be like my way of doing my Harrison Ford fantasy, continuing that, and my Peter Sellers, Peter Sellers fantasy. And I would be so down if Murray became the Better Call Saul of Stranger Things.
Brett Gelman. It was going to be appearing in a little show called Stranger Things, Thanksgiving, Christmas and New Year's. Yeah.
Your whole holiday season.
You don't even have to mark it on your calendar. It's already there. Just scratch out Christmas and put Stranger Things.
Brett
Gelman. Enlightened is available now on Netflix.
Entitled.
I'm sorry. Why did I say Enlightened?
Enlightened was a great show.
It was a great show. Yeah,
fantastic show. Unsung masterpiece.
Yeah, I agree.
Loved
that
it.
Was underrated.
I'm with you on that one. Entitled is available now on Netflix. There are links in the show notes. He also has a book. I'm going to put the links in the show notes. We didn't get to that this time, but we will get to it next time because you are welcome back anytime. Maybe as we get closer to season 5 and it's a fevered pitch.
Right.
Then you can come on and we'll discuss
the
more
book
about
is
plot points.
The book is The Terrifying Realm of the Possible. It's very Jewish. It's very neurotic, and it's very...
I love it.
No, but I think people... It's five characters who are stricken with a lot of stuff. So,
well, you are the
Zaddy. In a funny, surreal way.
You are the Zaddy.
I am the Jaddy.
Yeah.
I'm the Jaddy, the Jewish Jaddy. The Jaddy. I coined that in fashion.
Nice.
Too. You know, somebody had to do it. Like Elliot Gould is like, 80 by now. So, I gotta take that torch.
My favorite reel that you have put out lately is the one where you're wearing like a fur skinned robe with slippers on walking through the airport and somebody stops you and says, "Excuse me, are you Brett Gelman from Stranger Things?" And you said, "I'm just trying to quietly get to my gate for my flight," or whatever. It was really funny.
It's first of all the first fake. I would not, first fake. Unless it was vintage, a vintage real fur.
It's already been done.
But it's a fake fur. It's a faux fur. It's very nice. I love it. And I was wearing it, walking through the airport, and I'm with Ari. I'm with my wife, and I'm like, wow. Can you imagine, like, what an asshole I would be if anybody comes up to me and like, and I'm like, hey, no thanks. Like most people who are like, famous or kind of famous, like they're wearing like all black, and I'm like in this loud thing. So obviously I'm a whore for attention. And she's like, oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. Let's make a video of me coming up to you as a fan and you saying that to me. So that's what that
Meanwhile,
was.
Leonardo DiCaprio is at Jeff Bezos' wedding in Venice, getting into a boat with the hoodie pulled all the way over his face. And I'm like, you're at Jeff Bezos' wedding, dude. You didn't expect that we're going to be photographers. I mean, come on. I like Leo, but I felt like that was a little bit over the top. Anyway.
I have no idea what it's like to be Leonardo.
Neither do I.
So I don't know,
I don't even know what it's like to be Brett Gelman. So there you go.
I have no idea what it's like to be you guy, I don't, nobody knows.
It's
nobody
a,
knows.
It's a luscious life filled with love and happiness, and I can go to the grocery store.
You both glow incredibly. I love when fans come up to me. I love when fans come up
Well,
to
we
me.
Do too. It's happened twice.
Right.
Brett Gelman, thank you very
much, my friend.
We really
thank you guys so much. So great talking
Pleasure.
To you.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, you're probably wondering why I, Rachel, have taken over the voice duties at TCB. It's pretty simple. Astrid asked me to shut Brian up, even for a minute. Well, lovely Astrid, your wish is my command. Do you want to help Astrid too? You know you do. Leave a message for her, or me, or Chrissy at 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. You can be on the show too. Just call and say something. Anything. Or text us and we'll text you right back. Promise. Then head over to tcbpodcast.com and get your free sticker. It's your constitutional right to a sticker, and we must abide. You get the point. Follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and watch all the episodes on video at youtube.com/The Commercial Break. Best to you and Astrid, especially Astrid.
Brett Gelman, bringing a little Stranger Things right back to Atlanta where it has always belonged. Atlanta is truly a place where magical things happen, like Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. And I have seen my fair share of sets. I have not seen Brett Gelman. But I look forward to seeing him in his new spinoff show, Murray, a comedy by Stranger Things. Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be great?
I would love that.
Make it happen, Netflix.
We need to demand it.
Make it happen. All right. All of Brett's prescient information is down in the show notes, as it is about all of our guests. All of their pertinent details right there. Just open up your podcast player and there will be a hyperlink. And you know how it works. You put your finger on it and you go wherever it tells you to go. That could be Brett Gelman's book. That could be Brett Gelman's new Netflix show entitled. That could be Stranger Things Season 5 that will not be out for another couple months, so don't try and watch it right now. But maybe the old seasons you can catch up on before Christmas, Thanksgiving, and New Year's are all taken by Stranger Things.
The entire
holiday season taken up by Stranger Things. But I mean, honestly, it's the right move by Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It's the right move. They're going to have billions of views before 2026 even arrives. Billions of views. I mean, I just can't imagine in my own head what it would be like to be part of a cultural phenomenon like Stranger Things. Maybe someday the commercial break will have the same weight as Stranger Things.
I think when the aliens dig up our show,
yes,
they might not have the same...
Probably not. They're going to go, wow. Someone asked for 1,000 episodes of this? I can't even get through one. However, ChatTCB seems to think we're onto something.
That's right.
ChatTCB thinks we're one in a million. Oh, Chat, you're my best friend. I love you. You're so good to me.
You know, not he. It is our hype machine.
It's our hype machine. It's my mm-hmm. personal coach. It tells me get up in the morning and drink my eat my Wheaties and drink my Ovaltine.
Yes. It's your personal self-help coach.
All right. So thanks very much to Brett for coming on. And of course, if he's ever here in Atlanta, he's welcome into the studio.
Yeah, we got to have him there.
Yeah, that would be cool to have Brett mm-hmm. here and his wife. His wife's pretty entertaining,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, she's
actually,
great.
That might be the thing, is get them both on at the same time. Let them go at it with each other. They're pretty entertaining. They're one of those couples that you always want to invite to a dinner party mm-hmm. because they're always going to make some kind of trouble. A good trouble, but some kind of trouble. All right, 212-433-3TCB, 212-433-3822. Go ahead, dial us up. Questions, comments, concerns, content ideas, tcbpodcast.com, audio, video, and your free sticker, and youtube.com/thecommercialbreak for all the episodes on video when they air here on the audio. Okay, Chrissy, that's all I can do for now.
I think so.
I'll tell you that I love
and
you.
And I love you.
Best to you.
Best to
and
you.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I will say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.